Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
It's not about me. I'm only here for a minute. And I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello, welcome to our Lazarus and Powers. This is Scott Powers at The Athletic with Mark Lazarus of The Athletic. We have been we've been apart for months. It's been last podcast we did was after Bedard was drafted, right?
I think yeah, we did one from the draft, right?
Yeah.
But that's where we're not. We don't have, you know, we're not Canadian, so we don't have, you know, our mandated cottages to retreat to. So I've been retreating to my den and just watching a lot of TV and hanging out with a puppy who won't stop biting me.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
It's I don't know about you, but I'm ready to get back to work. Like I think this season, and I'm sure Blackhawks fans sense this differently than us, but I think last season, knowing that it was just going to be what it was and it really wasn't going to be interesting from a hockey standpoint, and certainly Bedard, but for this season is going to be interesting so much. And you sense it from the fans with certainly the interest and, I thought we still did work last year regardless, but it's and plus I feel rested. I think I've learned how to better prepare myself for seasons or better rest during the off season.
Well, it's funny. I think, you know, you get to like mid to late August and then you start having these like panic moments of, oh my God, hockey season's coming back. I haven't had enough of a summer yet. I'm not ready to go back to the grind. And then you get to like the first or second week of September. You're like, yeah, I need to get into a rink right now. I need to write something. I need to talk to somebody. Yeah. That's where I'm at right now. I'm ready to get working again. It was nice to get on a trip, talk to some players, bang out a story. Last year wasn't nearly as miserable as I expected it to be. And we talked about this a little bit throughout the year, how everybody came into it with eyes wide open and everybody knew exactly what it was. So even though the Blackhawks were abjectly terrible and one of the worst seasons in team history, it didn't feel that miserable because it wasn't like, you know, everybody understood what was going on. So it wasn't like guys were showing up to the locker room just pouting and miserable and demanding out and stuff like that. Everybody knew what was going on and the team kind of embraced it, had a little fun. You know, they were able to move on from losses. You were able to write some silly stories every now and then. And I think this year, you know, the Blackhawks are going to be bad again this year. Like, we need to preface everything with, like, the Blackhawks by design, like, they would like another top five pick. They're not trying to be good yet, but they are going to be interesting. They're going to be compelling, entertaining. You've got the Connor Bedard of it all. You've got potentially Kevin Korchinski. You got Lucas Reichel's first full year in the NHL. You got maybe Arvid Soderblom, you know, contending for the number one job. There are things to cling to if you're a Blackhawks fan, things to get excited about this year that just didn't exist last year. Last year, they were supposed to lose, and nobody on the team mattered because they were all just passing through.
Yeah.
Now you're getting this is the, you know, you've had the dead cat bounce and now you're on the way up. There are things to watch. There's, you know, every time Connor Bedard scores a goal, that's a glimpse of the future. Every time Lucas Reichel scores a goal, that's a glimpse of what you're waiting for here. And I think that this year, you know, the record's not going to matter that much again. I don't think people will be too upset by losses. I don't think they'll get too high on wins, but there's going to be so many little things to focus on and enjoy that I think for everyone, including us as writers, Jeff Perlman has had this, you know, he's the author of Behind Winning Time on HBO and all that, has been leading this discussion on Twitter lately about, you know, how the media is becoming increasingly homery and cheerleadery and how that's not supposed to be the way. And you and I don't root for the Blackhawks in any way. Like, we are not fans. We didn't grow up Blackhawks fans. We are purely objective. But it's also objectively more fun to cover a team that matters a little bit, right? Where you want readers engaged, and readers are more engaged when a team is good. So I think we're all looking forward to a more entertaining season this year and, you know, a little more significance to the hockey we're watching.
I guess a jumping off point from that a little bit and something I took some notes about when I wanted to talk about today, but I was thinking about it.
Wait. You took notes and prepared for a podcast?
Slightly. Wow. Yeah, I don't know.
We're turning over a new leaf this season. Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things I find interesting about this season with Luke Richardson is that I feel like he coached the win last year and no one really cared he did that because they weren't good enough to win most games and it was creating a culture and all those things. And I think this year it has to be coached to develop instead of the coach to win, almost, where like you need to play Reichel so many minutes and Bedard, and you don't want to give hand anyone anything, but you want those guys to make a ton of mistakes this year just so that they're better off in the future, where especially with them, like you don't want Reichel to go back to Rockford unless it's really needed. Like you want him to make those mistakes in the NHL, and probably Vlasic and like Kaiser, it'll be interesting. Like, does he get another shot in Chicago off the bat, or does he go to Rockford and be the number one defenseman, or even like Soderblom? Like, you want him to work through his issues this year in Chicago instead of sending him to Rockford, because I don't think a lot of those guys have kind of graduated from Rockford a bit. I think Vlasic and Reichel especially, and I don't think we'll ever see Bedard and Reichel unless it's for some sort of injury rehab at some point in his career. I mean, Kane and Taves never spent a second in Rockford, and I assume Bedard's the same. I think it's playing those guys minutes, where last year, you know, Jack Johnson got 20 minutes a game and they really didn't have a lot of young guys to dish out that ice time. I thought he did a pretty good job with Reichel and some of those guys later in the year when they came up, but this year it has to, like, Bedard has to be on the number one power play, and Korchinski, you know, like I think that's the also balancing act is Seth Jones is going to be pushed out probably at some point from the number one power play unit. Like, you need Korchinski to be that guy, and Jones has been that guy, and not at, you know, like he's hasn't had tremendous success on the power play. And if Korchinski is that guy, like, yeah, maybe you ease him into it, but you want to give him those reps. So I'm curious of, I think last year, it was hard for, you know, Richardson to really prove that developmentally, just because there weren't a lot of young guys. But with so many this year that could be, you know, brought in, and so many guys that are key players in the future, that you want them, you want that ice time. You want those opportunities just so that they are going to make mistakes. And it is, you know, it's how you deal with it afterward. But, you know, I mean, you don't want to just let everything fly. But I think it's, I'm curious on that aspect of how Richardson is the coach this year with so many young players.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back when you talk to Kane and Taves and Patrick Sharp and some of those guys about the early days, like the late 2000s of that core, and Dennis Savard was the perfect coach for them, right? Because he let them make mistakes. He just ran all three of those guys out there as the top line and said, go nuts. You're going to mess up a lot. I don't care. I don't want you to mess up, but you're going to mess up and we'll learn from it. But I want you to learn to be offensively creative in the NHL. That was Dennis Savard's MO. And, you know, Dennis Savard didn't get to see the fruit of his labors from the coach, from behind the bench, but he played a big role in making Kane and Taves the players they were, and Sharp, by just unleashing them when they were young. A lot of coaches don't do that in the NHL. And now the league is getting more and more speed, skill, and offense oriented. Those Blackhawks helped usher in this current era. So I think you see a little bit more of it now. But back then, it was really unusual to just let these guys run wild. And with Richardson, it's funny, you know, at our little subscriber hangout the other day, and when I was in Arlington, people keep asking me the same thing. Is Luke Richardson the guy long-term, or is he a placeholder? Is he Dennis Savard with a Joel Quenneville type waiting in the wings? And we don't know that yet. Like, he's shown that he can coach and he's shown that he can build a culture. So he can be that guy, but he's also got to get them to that point. Mm-hmm. He's got to be the development guy. So that's really, yeah, you bring that up. And I think that's a huge point, is he's a longtime NHL veteran. He showed clear favoritism to veterans last year. He can't do that anymore. He's going to have to be a developmental coach. He's going to have to be a teaching coach. And I think he's got the mindset for that. I know he thinks like a teacher. His daughter's a teacher, a high school teacher.
I mean, he's coached in the AHL too. So, like, yeah. I mean, he's been at that level. Like, he gets.
But just because you coach in the AHL doesn't mean you're good at developing players.
No, for sure. But
a lot of guys get stagnant down.
Yeah, no, for sure. But from what you've heard, I mean, what I've heard too, you know, just of him, that, like, developmental is part of, like, there's, like, it seems like there's different phases too where
he's got to prove it, right? He's got to,
the culture is important, and then, you know, like, the hard work ethic, and we saw that last year, and then it's gonna be development, and then at some point it's gonna be about winning, and it's about, like, line manching and doing all those different things of, you know, playing the best players when you need to, and restricting minutes, and yeah, there's so many different phases of that where but yeah, I think the initial phase was important, and now we'll see the second phase. And yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the other thing is, you know, you mentioned Soderblom, and I think I was actually kind of surprised that he wasn't on our Athletics Calder Trophy list, where he seems to be the one guy that no one really talks about, even when they talk about Blackhawks goalie prospects. And there's all this talk about Kamaso, and sure, he's the second round pick, and he's played for BU, and he's played for USA Hockey. But I think Soderblom's ceiling right now is so much higher than even Kamaso's, where I think Kamaso's, like, he had a decent college career, and certainly he had some illnesses and stuff that kind of affected him. And but I think he's so far still from the NHL, where I think Soderblom, he had his inconsistencies, and he certainly, but when the games really mattered in Rockford, and I thought last year was really interesting, we're down the stretch where they're fighting to make the playoffs, and they play him on three consecutive nights. Like, it was, it probably wasn't the best thing for him, but and he played so well. And one, I think it talked about just where the confidence in Stauber was not exactly there, but also that they believe in Soderblom so much. And I think he's going to be given all the opportunity this year to be the number one goalie, where Mrazek is probably more of the number two goalie. I don't know, something fell down. Yeah, I think his storyline will be interesting too, because the Blackhawks sort of need to figure out whether he's the number one of the future. Otherwise, like, yeah, you wait for Kamaso and otherwise to develop, but eventually, like, you need to figure out the goaltending thing too. But yeah, I think Soderblom's such a key to the season.
Yeah, the Blackhawks are very high on Soderblom.
Yeah,
I'm not sure the rest of the league really has paid any attention to him at all, to
for
be
sure,
honest.
Yeah.
With you. Like, no,
yeah,
like, no, I think that's why he's not on a list like that. No, internally, definitely, the Blackhawks feel really good about him, but if he does burst onto the scene this year, people are gonna be like, where the hell did this guy come from? Yeah, they're not even going to realize that he played games last year, because nobody paid any attention to the Blackhawks last year. So even when he was playing and playing pretty well, nobody cared.
I think part of him being a free agent too, like, he was an undrafted goalie and he comes over from Europe.
But that's how it works with goalies a lot, because, you know, you draft a goalie and very rarely does that goalie ever come all the way through and become and play for your team. That doesn't happen a lot with goalies. Yeah. They tend to be just kind of plucked out of nowhere, where they just start succeeding in Europe. Like, you know, and Antti Raanta was a free agent. They've done that before. Scott Darling was a free agent. They just find these guys. And I think because goalies, they tend to be a little older by the time they kind of come and realize their potential, that, you know, being drafted in a first or a second round as a goalie is hardly a guarantee you're going to be a good NHL goalie.
Oh, for sure, yeah. But I guess when it's when those guys are on the cusp, they're a little bit more known and they get a little bit more hype around them.
Yeah.
Where I think Soderblom's kind of flown on the radar.
Let's talk about Korchinski a little bit, because I think, you know, we know that Connor Bedard is going to be the number one center next year. We don't know what Kevin Korchinski is going to be. And he's a really interesting case, because anyone who saw him at camp last year or in the preseason knows that he probably could have played in the NHL last year. Like, he has NHL skating ability, but, you know, they're Kyle Davidson's been adamant, and this is the right thing to do, about being patient. We've seen it's worked out well with Lucas Reichel. By the time Reichel really broke in, he looked like an NHL player, and that's what they want with Korchinski. But the question is now, like, you know, you could keep him for 9 games and send him to World Juniors and send him back to, you can keep delaying him, but it's kind of like, unless he falls flat on his face at camp, I don't see how he benefits at all from going back to juniors and just dominating, you know, just bum slaying out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think
for
so
him to get in the league. Yeah. Right.
I also think the Blackhawks are going to burn his contract at this point. It's probably more to their advantage to burning the year. And even if he doesn't play a full season in the NHL, like, they need, they need to get to that second contract quicker, because I think the longer they delay it, like it may be more costly.
And they need to stagger them more, because they've got so many guys coming in.
I think especially with like a number one defenseman, like it's the more points he puts up under his entry level deal, like the more it's going to cost him on the second contract. So I think to have a year where he doesn't have as many points as a second or third year is a benefit.
Look at the second contracts that Adam Fox and Cale Makar and some of these young guys that just broke right in and were awesome right away signed. That's best case scenario. I mean, yeah. If Kevin Korchinski is anywhere near Makar or Fox, that's the best case scenario
for sure.
But you're signing these 19, 20 year olds to 8-year, $9.5 million contracts, and that price only goes up with each year when the cap goes up. I know we got to start talking about cap percentage more than the actual number, especially as it starts going up next year. But I mean, it's entirely possible that Korchinski is a, you know, monster contract in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and that's why this year I think if he's in NHL, like he's not, and there's a chance that I think he plays 10 games, plays 20 games, 30 games. Depending
still on goes how, to World Juniors,
still goes to World Juniors, maybe even goes back to the WHL and plays the playoffs out with them or something. Just I think he's gonna make the team out of camp unless he really looks like he needs more time, which what he did in the WHL last year, and he's done it for a couple of years now, and he's played about almost 200 games in the WHL last two years based on playoffs. Like there's a lot of reps there. I don't know, like you said, I don't know what the benefit of going back would be. Like he needs to be playing he needs to be playing in the NHL and playing that type. So the nice thing is that with the Blackhawks not looking to win, that you can ease him in. Like you can ease him in the roles and play him as much, and then pull back if you need to. But I'd be shocked if he's not with the Blackhawks, breaking camp, and then it's probably up to his play whether where he is by the end of the season or if he goes to World Juniors. But they have those options. So you spend time at the NHLPA Upper Deck event. Did you get any baseball cards, I guess, start off with?
I did not. There was a lot of talk about cards. I haven't really been a card collector since I was like 12. Yeah. I used to go to the Nassau Coliseum card show every year. I used to love that. I had like two monster boxes. You remember those monster boxes that could hold like thousands of cards?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had like two of them in my parents' basement on Long Island for just like decades. And then they moved when they retired and moved to Jersey. I don't think they took them with them. I don't know what's in there. I don't even know what the card market is like. I don't pay attention to this stuff, but there was probably some money
like
in there, man.
What were like your prized possessions?
I had Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. I had... Yeah. I remember my favorite one I bought was a Howard Johnson rookie card, because that was just sentimental value because he was my favorite player. But I went through
a Doc Gooden phase. So having Doc Gooden cards were important, and Jody Davis was mine, but Jody Davis wasn't really worth much.
I think the Griffey Upper Deck one, if I remember right, that was like a big one. And I had a couple of those that I got the honest way, just opening up packs. Like I didn't purchase those. Like I never went to a card other than the Howard Johnson one. I never went to a card show to buy a card. I just like looking at them, and then but I earned my cards the hard way, opening up the packs.
There used to be where we lived on the northwest side of the city, there's a place called Stevens like pharmacy, and it was walkable. I'd ride your bike there, and I remember like the 89-90 around that time was like we were really big, and there was the like the 89 Fleur card, the Billy Ripken fuck face.
So I
remember going there, and that was like the big card to get. And I wasn't like over the last year or so, I was at my mom's house and I pulled the cards out, and I don't know if they're worth anything. Everything has to be you got to send them away now to get the quality, the grading on it and stuff. Like
it's too much work. It's a real business now. Like my dad, I'm pretty sure this isn't apocryphal. I remember him telling me this story a long time ago, that he had a Mickey Mantle rookie card, like the Mickey Mantle rookie card, when he was a kid, and it ended up in the spokes of his bike. It's like a God, Dad, come on! That's the kid's college right there.
Did you collect hockey cards?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Not as hardcore as I did baseball cards, but
I collect cards.
I had football cards. I had basketball cards. I liked cards. I had like a 3 years there where it was really cool, like the late '80s, right around like '88 and '89, 90, 91.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. I think we're both.
Or just
the same,
everyone was into it, and we would just that's what we did. We collected cards.
I remember like Canseco McGuire's around that point. They're at 87 or so. Yeah. Anyways, what you spent a day in DC and you sat down with Connor Bedard and wrote a piece that you can check out on The Athletic, and I know you have some future pieces coming up, but I don't know, did they get some one-on-one time with Connor Bedard? What was that like?
Yeah, it was good. It was worth going out there just for that, right? I mean, we haven't had that opportunity. I think I'm the first person in Chicago that actually had a chance to sit down and talk with the kid, because everything's in a press conference or a scrum with him, because he's such a big deal. And, you know, we all know the circus is coming to town in training camp, and early in the season, you're going to have people from all over the country and Canada are going to be there to talk about him. Everyone in Chicago is going to be around him all the time. That first road trip is Pittsburgh, Boston, Montreal, Toronto. That's going to be a shit show, where he's going to be, you're not going to get, it was easy to get to talk one-on-one with Patrick Kane or Jonathan Toews over the years. It's going to be very difficult to get Connor Bedard early on in the season. So it was nice just to be able to sit down with him. He's exactly what you expect him to be. He is so smooth and polished. He's a very nice, polite kid. And he is a kid. He's 18. He just turned 18. And, he looks like it. He's like an 18-year-old kid. But he's very polite, nice, and he just won't say anything. He wouldn't even tell me, who he's living with. Like, which player? He's like, that's personal. Yeah. Everything was like, I asked him about the, I saw that he was like secreted into the back of the, we were in the same hotel, and he was like snuck in the back, he's Taylor Swift or something, while the other prospects were coming in the front door. And he's like, I don't like to talk about that. It's fine. It's normal. Whatever. Other guys deal with that. He's so defensive isn't the word, because he's not like a dick about it at all. Like, there's nothing aggressive or angry about it, but he's so guarded about not seeming special. He doesn't want to come across as a prima donna. He doesn't want to come across as different. He kept, everyone on the team is equal, all that stuff. He really buys into that idea. And I think you have to if you're him, right? Because either you're going to be the most conceited, cocky bastard in the world, or you're going to be what he's doing, which is kind of just keeping it all at bay and doing everything he can to make everything feel normal. And that was the vibe I got from him, is like, he has to be this way. Otherwise, his life is just going to be insane for an 18-year-old. Taylor Swift is in her 30s. She could figure out how to handle this shit. He's a kid.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of his defense mechanism against the world, is being as, kind of boring as possible. I told him in the middle of it, I'm like, you're very frustrating to talk to. He goes, it's only in interviews, I promise. And then sure enough, I see him later and he's like talking to his other prospects and buddies. And he looks like a kid. He's having fun. He's laughing. He's smiling. He's clearly talking shit on them. Like, he's just one of the guys. And I think it's really, really important to him that he be seen as just one of the guys. He doesn't want to elevate himself, because he knows everyone else is already doing that for him.
It'll be interesting too, as he's been interviewed by so many people at such a young age, and probably there's probably not a whole lot of consistency with that, unless, it's a beat writer or something that he's, with, yeah, in WHL. Just, I'm sure there's a guard up there, having been to prospect camp, there's so many different questions that he gets about his personal life and different things. And he does have this answer about just being that's personal and good for him. Like, there's boundaries that he wants to create. And I'm curious, as he gets to know people, or just the familiarity of where they're opens,
yeah,
up.
He'll loosen up a little bit. That'll happen. I told him, I'm going to be one of the guys you're sick of seeing pretty soon. So hopefully we'll get a little more. But that was part of the reason for wanting to go there, was just to hey, I'm one of these people that are going to be around a lot. And hopefully we develop that trust. And that's journalism, right? Is taking the time to develop that trust, where guys are willing to talk to you and guys are willing to open up to you, because they know you're not going to twist their words, and you're going to present them fairly. And, it's good for it. It's the reporter player relationship. I think people have a really skewed view of it. Like, they think it's combative. They think it's we're trying to get them and they hate us. That's not how it should be, and it's usually not how it is. It's kind of symbiotic, right? Like, we want to be able to tell great stories, and if you're an athlete and you have your own quote-unquote brand, you want your stories told. It's good for everybody, and sometimes if you're a player, and this isn't going to happen to an 18-year-old kid, but sometime down the road, look at all the stuff with Jonathan Toews over the years, you're going to have something you want to say. You're not happy about the way the team is doing. You're going to want to lay the groundwork for potentially a future trade. Having a reporter you trust that you can confide in allows you to start doing that, and allows you to control the narrative your own way a little bit. That doesn't mean that we're mouthpieces for them, not by any stretch. We're very critical of everybody that we cover, but having some kind of trust built between player and reporter is beneficial to both sides. And I don't think enough people think about that when they think about the media, as this monolithic entity. Like, a good reporter is someone who's honest and fair, but also, not looking to fuck a player over. Like, that's the number one thing a player looks for in a reporter is, can I trust this guy not to screw me over? And that takes years. Like Connor Bedard is going to take him time to find out who his people are. And you know, it'll be the work that determines that.
I also think it'll be easier when we start having hockey to talk about. Like, there's just been so much hyperbole and so many the questions over and over again. How do you handle the pressure? And
he won't even talk about
how are you an 18-year-old normal kid? You know, like,
yeah, he won't even acknowledge that he's locked to make the team and be the number one center. He's like, right, oh, right. I got to get through camp first. Like, just like when he was when the Hawks won the lottery, he wouldn't talk about, well, whoever takes me, you know.
Yeah, he's
so careful about that stuff. So yeah, once we have actual games to talk about, I think things will get a lot more interesting.
Yeah. Kevin Krasinski was out there as well. I know you're going to write about him, so you want to reveal everything, but what was
Well, we were it? Just talking to, I mean, I talked to him about the stuff we were just talking about, right? About, you know, where the best path forward for him is. And he seems open to anything, but
yeah,
I'm telling you, I'm very high on Krasinski. I went out to Seattle last year, and just watching him practice for 2 hours, and it was 2 full hours he was on the ice. He was on the ice for like 45 minutes more than anybody else. Very few players I've seen that can skate like that. I don't spend much time in the prospect world like you guys do, and you know, Corey and Scott Wheeler do. So I haven't seen Oliver Moore play in person in some of these guys. Korchinski is one of the best skaters I've ever seen, mm-hmm. like live. Like he has elite NHL skating ability. And you know, he said that he spent most of last season working on you know, his defensive game, which is always the toughest thing. Remember when Adam Boquist came in, he spent so much time working on his defense that he forgot how to play offense. You want that not to happen for Korchinski, but he has such a natural, easy ability to skate that he's going to be a valuable player. You know, no matter what, it's kind of like Duncan Keith, right? Like Duncan Keith wasn't really any kind of like offensive wizard, and he didn't put up a ton of points, but he was just such a gifted skater that he could do anything out there.
Yeah.
He could stop you. He could get past you. He could just, when you have that kind of edge work and that kind of speed and that kind of, you know, acceleration and burst, it just opens so many doors for you as a player. And I think Korchinski is going to be really fun to watch.
One of the things that the fact that we haven't talked in a while, but we had our survey, and when we talked about rookies, and I think a lot of people are looking forward to Reichel and Korchinski. There were a lot of answers that were pretty, I guess, expected.
Expected.
I think one of the more surprising ones for me was the Kanan Taves stuff, right? And again, this is maybe just, you know, reading social media, and you see people replying or in the comments, you know, that people are angry about this. But yeah, a lot of people were fine with how the Blackhawks handled Kanan Taves' departure. They were fine. You know, like, they didn't want Kanan Taves to return, like, it. And I'm sure having Connor Bedard changes a lot of this, you know, the kind of their perspective on the future. But it was surprising to me, at least, that I thought more people would have been like, yeah, we wanted Kane back or Taves back. Or
I wonder how much of that is like, if we had asked that entering the season last year. Mm-hmm. I think we might have actually. I have to go back and check our survey from 2022. I feel like once it's been done and people have come to grips with it, it's easier to say, yeah, you know what? They did the right thing. You know, obviously people were more upset with how Taves was handled than Kane, because Kane kind of wanted out and Taves kind of didn't. It was the vibe we all got there. But not that they gave really any of them an option, but the Taves one was split pretty much right down the middle. Were you okay with how the Blackhawks handled the exit of Jonathan Taves? It was 52.7% yes, 47.3% no. So, like,
yeah,
you know, like a presidential election right there. That's pretty close. And should they have attempted to re-sign, it was 58% no on Taves, 65% no on Kane, which is interesting because there's no question that Patrick Kane's a better player than Jonathan Taves is right now at this stage of his career. But Taves kind of just had this, you know, presence about him. And I think, you know, I still think it's silly that he's not on this team when you have Connor Bedard. He'd be the perfect mentor for him in so many ways. Nick Foligno is kind of taking on that role, and Nick Foligno is, by all accounts, like the single greatest human that's ever lived. It's going to be fun to work with him. Like, everybody talks about the guy in such glowing ways, and he's been the player who's been in Bedard's ear the most. You could probably figure out what that means for, you know, living situation in the city. That's my assumption. But Taves, you know, Foligno's never been a megastar. He's been a captain, but he's never been a star.
Yeah.
And Taves has been exactly where Bedard is. And I think that would have been a valuable voice and presence for him. And then Taves, to his credit, both he and Kane reached out to Bedard, even though they're not even Blackhawks anymore. I thought that was pretty cool when to hear that from Bedard. But I think that some people, that's why the Taves one's a little closer than the Kane one. The Taves' presence in the early years of Bedard, I think a lot of people would have seen as valuable. But I was surprised that it wasn't more. I thought that more people would have argued for his return. Basically, people are just giving Kyle Davidson the benefit of the doubt here. Like, he has earned the trust of the fan base. Like, you know, whatever he says goes, and the fan base is on board. Like, it's, would that be the case if they didn't win the draft lottery?
Yeah, yeah.
Who cares? They won the draft lottery, yeah, right? Doesn't sure. matter.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting too with and I guess, you know, with Danny Wirtz taking over for Rocky, and I sense that the organization was behind Kyle Davidson taking this patient approach, and I think Bedard really allows them to really see it through, you know, like there's no pressure to sell jerseys now or to do these, you know, marketing or draw tickets, that it changes. It just allows them to be bad for a couple of years if they need to be, or get those
really
picks
does buy them so much more time than they would have otherwise.
I think it changes everything. I guess the other, I mean, there are a lot of interesting questions, and certainly the comments always kind of, I guess, get directed toward the logo questions, but I thought, you know, whether Stan Bowman or Joel Quenneville should be reinstated, and the fact that the answers were different, and some of it feels like just the popularity of the two was,
like that doesn't make any sense to me. Like, if you think one should be back, they both should be back. If you think one shouldn't be back, neither of them should be back. People just like Joel. I mean, they just like Joel Quenneville more than they like Stan Bowman. Is not a popular guy in the Blackhawks fan base.
Yeah,
I think that's what it is.
Yeah, and I guess at some level, I mean, Stan Bowman had more power than Joel Quenneville. But either way,
do you think he did? Stan's released
from the John McDonough, right? Like, it's,
yeah, but the day he got released, ousted from the after the general block report, like, Bowman's statement was like, I was just a first year GM, I didn't know what was going on, which, you know, was kind of horseshit, but like, that was his thing. And Quenneville, I mean, that was Quenville's team, and Quenneville was the one, by all accounts, that was like the most agitated in that meeting, saying this couldn't interrupt with, you know, our chance to win a Stanley Cup and all that. And I mean personally, I think anyone in that room, including, I think I'm pretty sure I've said this before, but Kevin Cheveldayoff, who got away somehow scot-free, any grown-ass adult that was in that room and didn't do anything, didn't go to HR, didn't go to the cops, didn't go to the press, I'm done with all of them. I would want none of them to ever be in the league again. Like, I got no time for any of this. But I know I'm a little more militant about this than some. And do I expect Joel Quenneville to be reinstated? Yeah. Stan Bowman too? Yeah. It'll happen. Should it? It's a separate issue. I don't know yet. I'm torn in some ways on that. But if you think one should be back, then you should think all of them should be back, and vice versa.
It'll be interesting when it comes down to whether a team wants to hire them, right? Like, I think the NHL is not going to reinstate. I mean, from what I heard,
and Joel Quenneville is going to be a more attractive job candidate than Bowman.
Stan Bowman interviewed people this summer, but he wasn't officially reinstated. So I guess if it's a point where teams like, we want to hire one of these guys, then the league will do it. Because the league probably doesn't want to be at the forefront of this conversation either, where we've already reinstated someone without.
What I would like to see happen, the best case scenario in my eyes, is Joel Quenneville's reinstated, and then no team wants to hire him, because why would you put this person in charge of your young people?
I don't think the NHL is going to do that. I don't think they're going to reinstate them. I don't think,
It's like the Bill Peters thing. Like, why would you hire Bill Peters to coach a junior team? Yeah. A junior team. Knowing what you know about
hockey doesn't give a, you know, I would like the market, right? Like, it's
we always talk about how hockey, you know, regulates itself on the ice with fights and things like that, right? Well, I would like to see hockey regulate itself here, where if these guys are available, nobody hires them.
Yeah, but
it would send a message.
Yeah, it's people care, like, these things that not everyone cares about. That, I mean, that's what it comes down to, you know, like, it's not at the forefront of these people's minds. Like, John Van Breesburg wouldn't be in the role that he is with USA Hockey if it was the same. So,
oh, it's not going to happen that way. I just wish it would happen that way.
I'm done wishing. I've become so cynical and jaded on this stuff.
I know. It's so bad. Bill Peters, man. How do you on a junior team?
Yeah.
A junior team. Good God.
It'll be interesting when speaking of the NHL, when it releases this Hockey Canada report, and the fact that it's we're coming up here on 2 weeks before camp. And if it's released after camp, like it's, I know you want to get the truth right. And you want to, I'm sure there's a lot of litigation stuff involved in this, but to have this released after, I think after camp starts, it's just, it's unfair to everyone. Like it's just, you need to, you've had a long time for this. And yeah, again, you want it done correctly, but I think there are a lot of people assuming that this was going to be released before the season starts and you can figure out what you're going to do with players that are on the list and players are, you know, like their futures are, you know, certainly if you're been involved with this, I expect those guys probably won't be playing hockey for a long time. So I'm
pretty sure that there's a lot of hockey reporters every Friday around 4:45 PM that are bracing for the news dump every week and are a little surprised that it hasn't come yet.
Yeah. We put out for some questions.
I think we hit on a couple of the topics already, but
okay.
Let's see what we got. Would you define? This is Kyle Hammacher. What would you define as a successful season for the Hawks? Major prospect progress plus another high pick? That sums it up, right?
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, I think you want those guys to take strides this year. And like ultimately, if this team's good, like then, you know, like if you've done it correctly and you've played those guys and this team wins,
hey, great.
Yeah, like you can't control that at this point. Like last year, like they
you don't want to be picking eighth or ninth next year. I think that's what it comes down to. Like if you want to be, if you're competitive, great. But if you're not going to be competitive, you don't want to be middling to bad. You want to be top five in red.
I think last year, like you can control that a bit. This year, like if you're playing Bedard on the top line and playing 20 minutes and that.
Yeah. What if Taylor Hall's good again? It's entirely possible.
No, for sure. I still think if Taylor Hall's good, the Blackhawks aren't better than last year. Like you've taken so much from, I mean, you've taken Domi and Kane and
McCabe and
yeah, like you've taken so much, and the fact that Zaitsev's still on this team, like it's, you know,
he's
like
the secret weapon.
Unless he has a bounce back season, like and you have Mrazek, who you know who was up and down last year, and certainly injury prone, and Soderblom kind of going through a first financial season. So, I'd be shocked, but yeah, I think it's yeah, whatever they are, but the development part's so important, you know. What are the forward lines? How much of the season does Kuchinski play? Curveball, what do you make of Michkov repeatedly being scratched and the Philadelphia goalie staying in Russia? Yeah, I don't
understand. Aren't you glad the Blackhawks didn't draft Michkov that we don't have to figure out that story?
Yeah, I don't develop that scene that playing for Ska's an adventure it's for
the
most
is that the most political sports team in the world?
Yeah, possibly. I don't know why he's not playing. I mean, it's odd. Forward lines. I'm curious to see who plays with Hall and Bedard. I doubt Reichel.
Tyler Johnson makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, and probably putting Anthesiou and Reichel together again.
Yep.
If Gutman's healthy.
You need like a pass first guy with Bedard and Hall. They're both scorers.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
And I think Tyler Johnson at this stage of his career can kind of just. He's so pliable. He can just go into any role, basically. And he's such a good guy. He's not, you know, this is a guy who played on the fourth line to go win a cup with Tampa after being a star. He will embrace any role. He gets to play with Bedard and Hall. He'll be like, hell yeah, I'll just feed them pucks all day long. I'll work in the corners. Like, I think that's the most logical choice. You don't want to have like a Taylor Radish or even a Lucas Reichel. You don't want another goal scorer potentially on that line. You don't want Reichel to develop separately. And
I'm curious what Reichel develops into, because I'm not sure he's a pure goal scorer. I feel like he's
but you want him to be able to lead his own line, right? You don't want him to be a passenger. So I think by keeping him apart from Bedard early on, it's going to allow him to kind of take over a line on his own, because you know he's probably going to play wing, not center. I know they were kind of back and forth, but he's clearly emerging as a left wing. And Luke Richardson, he was very high on Athanasiou as a center. And they worked well together. So that's probably your number two center right there is a Athanasiou.
Yeah.
So you let Reichel kind of develop a little bit separately from Bedard. They can work together on the PP1. But you know, you want him to be able to be assertive on his own line. And if you're on a line with two number one picks, you're not going to be able to dominate that line.
Yeah. I'm curious too. Like I mean, Gutman looked pretty good last season. And if he comes back, and if you have Dickinson and you have a lot more centers in the mix that are probably a little bit more traditional centers, and whether, you know, where those guys fit in, and, you know, and sprinkling Foligno over a bottom six line, or maybe, you know, and then certainly
guys like Foligno and Dickinson, they can play wing, they can play center, they can kind of just go wherever you want them to go.
Yeah, I guess I'm not sold on Anthony being a center completely. Like, I'm
not either, but I see the appeal. Like, because if you have a center with that kind of speed,
yeah,
it just opens up such a different style of game that you can play. It requires so much attention from the defense that it just really opens things up for your wings.
Yeah.
And it worked at a very small sample. And I think Richardson is going to, he wants to see it work at a longer sample before he makes a decision on that.
Yeah. Yeah. I certainly Tkachuk and Radish are two guys that could potentially be on the Hockey Canada list. And, we'll see how that plays out. And they've signed, like, when you look at who potentially, and guys like Reese Johnson and Mackenzie Entwistle, and there's an assortment. I mean, Donato, they think can play a top six role, so maybe he.
Wow, I completely forgot he was on the Blackhawks.
There's probably
Colin Blackwell still around, right?
Yeah, Blackwell.
And you got all these guys. It's going to be interesting to see, like, guys like Reese Johnson and Entwistle, who have been kind of like really the only young guys going through this rebuild early on. Like, do they still have a place on the team? Because they've like paid their dues, and you think that now there'll be their time, but do they have enough of a ceiling that they can, you know, survive all these veterans that they're bringing in, and they're going to keep adding people and all these prospects coming up? This is going to be a make or break NHL season in a lot of ways for some of those fringe guys.
There's a question about Bedard playing with Reichel.
Does Drew Commesso start down in Rockford, and how long will it take for him to make his debut? That's from Willie.
I think he's really far away from the NHL. And certainly, you know, I guess transferring from college to NHL, to AHL, we'll see how it goes. But I think it's a consistency standpoint where he's looked brilliant at times at college. But if you look at the total package, and some of it was injuries and illness, but his save percentage wasn't crazy in college, and he certainly got some great opportunities with USA Hockey, but I think he's far away. I think him and Stauber, as good as Stauber looked in the NHL last year, I think it was telling that they didn't even want him to play him down in the stretch in Rockford, where I don't know if his confidence was lost or the team's confidence in him, but I think both those guys can benefit from as many starts as possible in Rockford, and you know, probably Mrazek and Soderblom staying healthy in Chicago, just so those guys aren't having to be rushed to the NHL, because I thought Soderblom was rushed last year and spent too much time in the NHL.
At the end of his NHL stint, he had
well, they let him out to dry for like seven goals
in his last game, and then he got back to Rockford and it wasn't good early on there either.
Yeah, like, and he got lit up the first game, and they got hurt in the second. And
you
got
to be really careful with goalies, and like, it's one thing to have like a forward who's just a little over his head. When a goalie is feeling it and he's not ready for what he's being put through, it could have long term mental effects.
It's harder to manage. I mean, Davidson's preached such a developmental patience, you know, just developmental patience with all the players. The goalies, it's probably even more the case, but it's harder to manage because you don't have as many goalies, you know. So I wouldn't be surprised if something happened to Soderblom or Mrazek, if they'd look at something on the wire or something, just to bring someone that they can put in the NHL to plug in there, because I don't think they want to rush Stauber and Commesso this year. I think they like their upside of both those guys, but they also know those guys just need development. And Commesso's got a huge ceiling too. I mean, he does have the potential. They draft him in the second round. I think it's part of
hate Drew Commesso so much, Scott? What is your problem?
Part of it's also you only play so many games in college, right? Like it's that workload, and
it's a big jump.
So I Stauber coming from college too, that it was an adjustment for him. So I think the Blackhawks like their goaltending future, but it's just a matter of kind of letting it play out.
We got one more from Willoughby. He asks, what's a realistic point total for Bedard? Probably like 65, 70 points.
Yeah.
That's a lot for a rookie. Like, that's
that feels like a lot too. But I the one benefit is for him is that he's going to get every single huge
opportunity. He's the man here.
Yeah.
And I think the Taylor Hall signing was or acquisition was, like, that was really crafty, because he fits he checks so many boxes. He's going to be someone who can play with Bedard. He's someone who's been he's an MVP, a number one overall pick. He understands all that. He can work with Bedard, and he's going to make Bedard better. I think that you know, and for Hall's sake, you know, why would you want to go from Boston, the best regular season team of all time, to this shit show? And it's like, he's going to get to just go nuts. He's going to get to show that at 31 years old, he can still be a star in this league. He could still get, he could get one more huge payday in 2 years if he and Connor Bedard gel. So I think that the two of them are going to be a pretty exciting combination to work together. I think that, you know, that's as much as anything is what Bedard has going for him. He's got a real line mate.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and Taylor Hall has something to prove. I mean, it wasn't what I think he or Boston expected. And yeah, there is that proof. And yeah, it'll be fascinating. And motivation certainly helps. And
so what season number 12 for us, Scott?
Yeah, not bad.
This is season number 12. We both, our first days were exactly the same on January 19th, I want to say, 2013, when the lockout ended.
Crazy.
Season 12. And this is how many seasons with The Athletic now for you?
Since 15, 16.
Is this the first time there's like real optimism?
Yeah.
A couple years ago when they made the Jones trade and they signed, you know, Fleury, people thought that maybe they could like.
When they got bounced from Nashville that season, I mean, that season they won games.
They won 50 games that year. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was all Corey Crawford and the Kane line.
Yeah,
I was smoking mirrors, but yeah, I guess I forget sometimes how long The Athletic's been around. That year was you were.
Well, we weren't credentialed the first season, and then later in the season they credentialed us, and we covered. We went to St. Louis and covered the games against the Blues, and they lost in that first round. And then the next season, yeah, we traveled somewhat and covered the playoffs in Nashville. And
well, my 5 year anniversary is coming up this weekend with The Athletic, and I think this is the first time going to a season where, you know,
yeah, we've never covered playoffs together.
Like, fan base is genuinely excited about something. So
yeah, no, it's certainly. Yeah, I think we see it in people's interest in the story and certainly in the podcast. And I think we're both excited and both rested and ready to get going for an interesting season. And
we're gonna take the podcast a little more seriously this year, which I know we say every year, but we mean it this year.
Yes, we mean it. and we're off to a good start. Today was good. We feel like we stayed on topic and yeah,
we casted a pod.
Yeah. That's didn't get to a Pearl Jam concert.
We're recording this Thursday. It is 11:48 in the morning right now. There is a show in 7 hours and 12 minutes. I don't have tickets yet because I don't have a babysitter yet. See, here's my problem, and it's not a problem. It's a great thing. This is one of the reasons that we started dating. My wife is a big Pearl Jam fan, so I can't just ditch her to go see a show with my buddies like all my friends are doing. Like, we both got to go, but we've got a 7-year-old and an 11-year-old, and we won't get home till 1 a.m. Yeah. Really hard to find a babysitter who will stay till 1 a.m. on a weeknight. And we have no family in the area. We have no support system, really. So hoping for a miracle.
Yeah.
I think my wife has pretty much said, if I want to be a selfish asshole, I can go be a selfish asshole and just go by myself. Really trying to avoid that. Yeah. But I landed from D.C. like a half hour before the show started on Tuesday. And at the last second, all of a sudden, those $300 seats were available for like $40. So if I want to go tonight, I can go.
Yeah.
I'm just, I need a miracle to happen. It's right. Killing me, man. It's killing
me. We'll be praying for you.
You should be.
Yeah. Sounds good. We will be, I don't know, maybe back at this next week or the following week. Whatever. We'll be at the rookie tournament.
Yeah, rookie camp starts on Wednesday. So
Wednesday, and then I'll be out in Minnesota covering those two games. And as of now, it sounds like Bedard's going to play at least one of them. And they'll play St. Louis one day and Minnesota another.
What do you think about that? Are you surprised Bedard's playing in those? I'm a little surprised. A
little bit. I think
Kirby Doc is always in the back of everyone's minds.
Well, I think it's beyond that. Like, I think there's been more injuries. And even last year, it was, I feel like someone got hurt last year.
Colton Doc got hurt.
And Lewinsky did.
Lewinsky, yeah. Concussions.
Yeah.
It's scary to put them out there in meaningless games now. You look at the NFL and like, you know, Justin Fields took 11 snaps all preseason. Like, you just, it gets so hairy now to put guys out there. I'm surprised that I think it's great. And you know, you wanted to play and I think it's good.
I think Bedard also doesn't want to be treated differently. So like at what point do you make that decision? Yeah. I'm curious. Like, certainly if he gets injured, then they can.
That it's really bad.
Yeah. So the Blackhawks will be saying their own prayers.
Just remember everyone, Scott Powers put that into the world, not me.
I think there are plenty of people questioning this already. So but as of now, yeah, it should be interesting. A lot of those guys will, you know, they have a lot of those guys that are going to potentially make the NHL roster on that rookie team. So it'll be
do you miss Traverse City? I always like going to Traverse City.
Yeah, no, for sure. It was
no offense to our friends in the state of hockey.
Yeah, no, definitely. It was a cool format, you know, like plus people always like walking around and
oh god, like every GM in the league was there and they were just like happy to talk to any. There's no PR people in the way of anybody. Yeah. It was great.
Except for the Blackhawks people usually weren't happy to talk to us still because they were afraid to talk to us. So
they're never happy to talk to us, let's be honest.
No, but it's I feel like it's gotten slightly better. But before yes. then it was like, oh, I'd see Stan Bowman and he wouldn't be able to talk to him or something. So yeah, so that we got that next week, and the following week is training camp, and here we go.
And thank God hockey training camps are shorter than baseball and football ones.
Yeah. No, the preseason we're a month games out from the regular actually, season. Yeah. Preseason games are a little bit more relevant this year, too. So it's, all interesting. So we'll be back at it here next week or the following week, and plenty of stuff to talk about with the rookie tournament and whatnot. So for Mark Lazarus, I am Scott Powers, and this is Laz and Powers. And I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.